David Batstone is kicking us off this morning, and for those of us in the anti-trafficking world, he was one of the first voices to bring the cause of modern-day slavery to the world. And God has used him in that realm in huge ways. He's also the founder of Just Business, a social impact investment firm, president of Not For Sale, multiple books that he's written. Last year, he received the UN Women of Peace Award for 2017. He's a professor of entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of San Francisco School of Management, anti-trafficking activist, world traveler, and all-around great guy. Let's give a hand to David Batstone.
Well, this is really a shock. When they had my presentation at 8:30 a.m., I thought it was going to be me and my best friend. But thank you. Or my best friend has a lot of friends he brought, so thank him. Really, it's great to be here. And I know that you'll remember every word I say because I'm not dressed very sharply. All right, so I really thought about that. Okay, I want these folks to remember me, so change my clothes quickly to something that looks like a dag. Okay, great. I'm from San Francisco. And thank you very much. Any other San Franciscans here or Californians? Okay. All right. The land of nuts. Okay, thank you. Want to talk about how I even got into being an entrepreneur investor. And it is very funny when I go to an event. I really appreciate being known as an anti-slavery activist because oftentimes people say, well, you're a venture capitalist, and those things don't always go together. Let alone a professor who does something outside of the university, something practical. So I didn't plan to be an abolitionist. I was in Silicon Valley, investment world, private equity, and I was, you know, to a real shock that I learned that a local restaurant that I used to go to regularly was the center of a human trafficking ring. It brought over 500 teenagers, 14 to 19, many of them, from Bangalore in India area into the United States, into San Francisco for the purpose of forced labor. First in the restaurant where I frequented, and then out to fruit and vegetable fields, out to construction crews and brothels in Northern California. Forced labor, people's freedom taken from them, slavery in the 21st century in my backyard. So, you know, it was really a strange thing is that for me, oftentimes we say, well, what do God wants me to do? And I'm pondering what's God's meaning for the world in my life. And I really do think it's usually the wrong question. I think God is asking us questions through life, brings things into our life. In fact, this weekend, something's going to happen to you that's going to require an answer for you. Not your question, you're being questioned. And I felt, for whatever reason, I was being questioned. Maybe we even say I was called. But I felt like I needed to do something about this. I'm sure a lot of people read about it in the newspapers. I think a lot of people went to the restaurant even. But for whatever reason, it didn't change their life. They walked away. But I felt like I needed to do something. So first I said, okay, I'm going to take a year leave of absence and travel around the world and figure out what is this thing called human trafficking. And so I followed the money. I went from San Francisco to Bangalore. Then I went from Los Angeles, where 112 women from Thailand had been tied up into a factory, forced to sew clothes all day and sleep there at night. I went to Thailand. I went from Houston, where I investigated trafficking in these cantina bars. Men would walk in, and there would be women all along the wall standing with numbers on them. And the guy would have a drink. He'd go, okay, I want number four. He could buy her for a night, a week, a year. People for sale. And I went from Houston to Peru and Guatemala. So I went around the world, and I learned that this is not something that's a freak accident or strange occurrence, but it is actually happening in the world all over, and it's 30 million people. And my plan was, you know, as I said, was, okay, what can I do? I was a writer for New York Times, Chicago Tribune. I'll write a book. I'll make it visible, take a year and investigate it, write that book, and go back to my life. And Once you take one step, sometimes your second foot starts lifting itself up to take the second step. That's the problem with walking. Because I met this woman, her name is Kunam, and she lives in the north of Thailand. And many of you here might know Chiang Mai. And in Chiang Mai, she would be walking to her studio. She's an artist, and she saw young kids living by the waterfront, by the aqueducts that surround the city. And she went over and talked to them and found out that they were from all over the place. They had been trafficked, but they had escaped some of the karaoke bars, which really are child sex rings, many of them. And she got so upset, she ran in the next night and grabbed a couple kids and ran out. Not very sophisticated, but she wanted to do something. She was impassioned. And so when I met her, she had rescued 27 kids, got out of town because the karaoke bar owners didn't like that. And she was living in a field in northern Thailand. This is how I found her. I don't know, that slide doesn't want to stay there. Great. That shelter was all they had. It was grass hut. And on the it was a dirt floor, four posts. That was it. 27 kids living in there. So it wasn't a very heroic second step. If any of you are with me, I am sure you would have made the same promise I made that day. I'll do something to help you. So I promised to build her home, right? I'll build a home for your kids, 27 kids and yourself. We'll have a proper home. Well, I got back to San Francisco, and I get a communication from Kunam that the only thing they had burned down. And they're in dire straits. They're begging from the beggars. They're begging from the monks who go out and gather their food every day as a sign of spiritual detachment. They would go to the monastery and beg for food. She said, there's any way you can get food to us, money or anything to help us. So I got one of my most naive, gullible students to go and carry $10,000 cash on his body. And he's here today. Where are you? Go. There he is, Mark Wexler, who was my student at the time. Go, you know, ask him to do anything. He's really gullible. That was, 18 years later, Mark and I started Not For Sale in about 10 companies. So it was a great first relationship. You know, you test people, see if they really are committed. All right. So what's fantastic is that, we ended up, she kept rescuing kids faster than we could even make promises. And so she had 88 kids. And we said, okay, we better do something a little bit more organized than Dave just writing a check. And so we started Not For Sale as a way to build a village in northern Thailand. And it's really extraordinary that, you know, now 11 years later, these kids, they grow their own food. They're going to schools. They're mostly stateless children, if you know much about Thailand. They're from ethnic tribal groups. And so they're really not even allowed to go to school. They're not even allowed to go to clinics because they're undocumented, as it were. And so these kids, we've been able to get them into schools. We've been able to, the kids that we met on the ground 15 years ago, today are all graduate from university. First stateless children in the history of Thailand to go to the university and graduate 3 years ago was from our village. Now we have 45 in university. And what's great about that is once you get a university degree, you're on the pathway to eligibility to citizenship, right? So it creates a whole other set of possibilities for you. And so, you know, for us, that was, you know, for Mark and I, that was super inspiring. And we thought, you know, if we did it in Thailand, we could do it other places. So we started a shelter in Peru and then in, you know, Romania and then, around the world we're Vietnam and we're starting to do this in every continent where people live. And so about 5 years into it, though, I have to make a confession, as inspiring as it was. And if someone asked me why I do what I do, I'll go back to those kids that I met, those 27 kids. That's still my inspiration. But at the same point in time, we realized we could build 10,000 shelters in every country in the world. And we still would not solve the problem. We're at the end of the river pulling bodies out. They're drowning. They're flailing. And at some point, you have to go upstream and say, how do I stop it upstream? We need mercy and compassion. We also need the reordering of priorities, of economic platforms, of justice. And really, a lot of you in the room, I'm sure, see business as a way not only to address the needy, but also to equip and empower the needy. And that's what we wanted to end up doing. So we decided we need to go upstream. We need to come up with a different way of addressing the problem of trafficking. Also, Mark and I, we wrote on a piece of paper, we got all of the anti-trafficking groups in the world we knew, all the major ones, IJM, Free the Slaves, Stop Slavery in Thailand. We put them all together. We took their budgets, and they were about 100 million, all our budgets combined. Then we looked at the trafficking industry, $32 billion a year, and that was a conservative figure. That's a David and Goliath scenario right there. And although I do like the odds of David against Goliath, I think if I could give David a few more stones, he's got a better shot. And in fact, I think David and Goliath, maybe they're in the wrong fight. Maybe he needs to think about fighting differently than Goliath usually is used to fighting. How do you change the terms? And so we need to reinvent the business model. We need a different game. I'll tell you right now, there's not enough charities in the world that are going to scale to create the kind of challenge we need to the problems that we face. Whether it's extreme poverty, whether it's malaria, HIV, AIDS, global warming. But, you know, also it struck me, I was a venture capitalist, right? For some reason, when I found the problem of human trafficking, what did I do? I opened my heart and I shut down my brain. I would never create a business like a nonprofit. All right? What kind of capital do you get? I don't. I beg for money. Oh, but you must get the best talent in the world because you're facing the greatest problems. No, I get volunteers. Or I'll go to Stanford, Harvard, Yale, Geneva College. I'll say, hey, who wants to, you know, tell them what you're doing. And then a young student will go, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. If I can't get a job at Goldman Sachs or Google, I'd love to come work for you. At what point did I tell you I wanted losers, right? But it's our expectation. Of course I get secondhand computers because I'm only fighting human trafficking. Get the best computers for a new social media snap that gives a 30-second, you know? All right, so how do you reinvent the model? So really decided that we would start a company. And the first company was to gather rich herbs from the Amazon because we had discovered in our work in Lima, in our shelter, that these kids, many of them really literally did come from upstream, they came from the Amazon area. So, you know, we kind of said, okay, first, top talent. We got the 50 most talented people we knew. We threw them in the room. We were good at forced labor at that. We locked the doors. You can't leave for 24 hours. And they came up with the idea to start a beverage company. So we started Rebel. Roots, extract, bark, berry, leaves. Be a rebel. Don't drink the same old crud everybody else drinks. Right? And the plan was to source the ingredients from the vulnerable communities in the Amazon, create dignified jobs that would enable long-term growth and decisions and empowerment for the tribes, sell those beverages in the U.S. market, take a percentage of the revenue, put them back into not for sale to invest in more communities. It looks great on paper unless you're the guy doing it on Monday morning, right? But, I was telling folks last year, it's funny when I said, okay, I'm going to let my head do the feeling and my heart do the thinking now. I'm going to put them together. I said, if I was in Silicon Valley and I wanted to start a beverage company, I wouldn't take that social worker's great lemonade recipe because it really does well at church and create a company out of it. If I was in Silicon Valley, what would I do? I'd find the best beverage maker in the world. I would go search long and hard, find that person, and Mark and I did. Equip them to say, you know, what's Pepsi and Unilever want to pay you for their next beverage? They go, well, you know, okay, we'll match it. Really? Yeah, we'll match it. We'll give you equity in the company, and you can create whatever beverage that you believe will really change the beverage industry. And he goes, okay, I'm in. Okay, Tuesday morning, how the hell are we going to pay for that guy? Right? What are we going to do next, right? Oh, wait, I'm in Silicon Valley. I'm not in a nonprofit. I'm not going to ask for a donation. I'm going to go tell people I've got the best beverage maker in the world, and we're going to create beverages that are going to change the way people think about beverage, right? And so we got investors, not donors. All right, fast forward. Today, Rebel is the number one health beverage in America. We just raised our last Series E round for the company's valuation. And I want you to get this: is $100 million. What did I say? The total budgets of all the NGOs in the world were fighting human trafficking, $100 million. You go, yeah, but that's a company. The company is fighting slavery every day. And this is how it's doing that. That we source ingredients not based on how we can get the cheapest ingredients. We base it on how we can make the most impact by the way we source our maca or our matcha or our gaisana leaf, right? So we are already embedding in the mission of the company the change we want to see, the empowerment we want to see. So we started in the Amazon. Now we source in 31 countries with our ingredients. We now return every year to Not For Sale $750,000. I haven't asked for a donation in 2 years because that funds our work. I don't have to, you know what, if you say, how can I help you? I don't say, write me a check. I say, go out and buy a drink for God's sakes. And not one of those cruddy sugar drinks, buy a Rebel. All right, so this is the model we wanted to work with. All right, so how do you reinvent business models? So not only with our own companies, but with other companies. Now, some of you have seen Blood Diamond. Leonardo DiCaprio, right? He wasn't at the front of the boat. He was actually in the back of the mine, okay? But Leonardo in Blood Diamond really illustrated the plight of young kids in Congo area and in East Africa. And so, funny enough, a diamond company called Spence, a Canadian, they came to us and said, we want to reinvent the way diamonds are done because today it's done on the back of people in Africa and the enslavement and exploitation of those people. We want to use technology to create a new way of making diamonds. It's biomimicry. What it does is it mimics what happens in the earth with a stone. You take a little chip, a diamond chip, and you blast it as if it's from the heat of the earth, a plasma blast, and out comes a 2-3-4 carat diamond. Extraordinary, right? So they said, look, we want to work with Not For Sale. I said, why? I said, well, we want to tell particularly millennials that every time they buy a diamond, you have a choice. You can buy a mine diamond, they don't say blood diamond, or you can buy an artisan diamond, they don't say a laboratory diamond, right? Dear, I love you so much, I'm going to buy you a laboratory diamond. Doesn't work. Well, here's the other problem then. Oh, you're going to buy me a diamond? You say, yeah, I'm going to buy one of those cool artisan diamonds. Oh, not a real diamond? No, it is a real diamond. Yeah, I want a real diamond. So that's a marketing problem. So they have marketed with us that if you buy one of these diamonds, we're going to give the money back to the kids of the Congo. We're going to create different futures for them, right? So you have a great diamond. Can't tell the difference between a mine diamond. And we're going to put 1% back into the Congo and into Uganda and that region. So we took the money and we said, okay, how do we use this, right? So before our first model, I'll go back to Thailand. We created a village and it's a center out of which we create resources. And it really works well for children. But we thought, you know, let's try another model for creating change. Let's invest in the lives of people who have been affected by the very industries that are now funding us. So we started an entrepreneurs challenge this last year, this summer, that we would put a call out for any refugee living in the countries of Uganda or Congo, that they can make a pitch to us. And it can be an idea for a new business. It could be solving a water problem. It could be a community problem. Bring your business idea to us, and then we'll evaluate, and we're going to give investments out. So instead of creating a training center, we're just going to get out of the way. We're going to find people with great ideas and invest in them. It's a completely different way of thinking about how you distribute empowerment and aid. Rather than us managing it, we're letting it flow out. So 130 teams from around the country from refugee camps made proposals. Then we took it down to our teams at 30, and then we had a competition with people in the room like this, and they got up and made their pitch. And then we ended up 3 grand prize winners and 17 others. We funded 20 companies. You know what's extraordinary about this? Not For Sale has never seen the kind of scale of impact within the first few months of a project that we've seen in this project. It's because all these entrepreneurs are creating small businesses and they're hiring. Here's Simon, who's the grand prize winner. He's making sandals out of tires. The bottom of the sandal is treads, yeah? And so he's employing 20 people in the refugee camp. He, right along the Nile River, he lives, it's called Blue Nile, beautiful place. And he's employing 20 people in his business. Second place was Bernard. Well, he's got a great idea. You take a pig, a woman, a sow, and you give it to a family and say, okay, you raise it. When it has piglets, you give me two and you keep two. Now he's got hundreds of families all over the refugee camps who are now growing pigs with him. It's kind of multiplying. And then Esther, I love it. She's got a fashion company out of a refugee camp. Hires 13 women. I said, how did you start? And Mark was working on a team, helping her get her pitch right. Told Mark that she would take her UN food vouchers, sell them, and take half the money to buy fabric. I'd say that's an entrepreneur you believe in. Right? These are the people that they have intelligence. They have incredible aptitude. They just don't have the resources around them. So what we want to do is take business to business, empowering people to make that change. All right, so back to our entrepreneurship. So we're empowering other entrepreneurs, but then back to our entrepreneurship and said, okay, what's the next rebel? How do we do another rebel? Because that's worked pretty well. And so we found this company, Square. Square Organics, you can find it in Whole Foods, you can find it HEB, you can find it 24 Hour Fitness. And it's a protein bar. It's like a Cliff Bar without all the bad stuff. Remember that when next time you're shopping. Okay. But again, now we start to bring the models together. All right. And I want to tell you this. We're always experimenting. Our slogan is, are you smarter this week than you were last week? If not, why not? So we're always experimenting. So, okay, we have Rebel, and then we have this entrepreneur's model. How do we bring them together? And so with Square, we're looking at, okay, a lot of, we use cacao, so we use chocolate. What if we, in the Dominican Republic, where we're sourcing their chocolate, we work with the suppliers of the cacao, and instead of us, like, trying to create an entrepreneur's challenge, let's say all the farmers who are working in that particular supply chain, we are going to invest in your best ideas. Turn them into entrepreneurs, right? They're no longer just sourcing our cacao, they're also now changing the way we even think about cacao and the possibilities of how they work in their villages. So you're taking entrepreneurship within your supply chain. To me, this is the future, so that when we started, say, with the village in northern Thailand with a shelter, we were doing intervention. Then we start to learn where these kids are from, and we start to understand that, okay, our research tells us that most of these kids are coming from a particular area. In Peru, we discovered it was the Amazon. All right. So then we build a company to address upstream those causes. So does it work? All right. So it's very important for us to go back and see what is the impact in communities we're having or not having. And so I went back to the Amazon 2 years ago, and I wanted to see, you know, the schools that we built. And what I really love is that the communities that are sourcing the ingredients for Rebel now are choosing how to build their own schools. I love, you see the school in the back, was they built that school out of the money they got from Rebel. They have now in construction one that's 10 times that size. And I love that, right? It's their choice, not our choice. So while we're there, I was really honored that the Gina tribe, this is not what I wear, I didn't bring it today because you wouldn't listen or honor me. But the Gina tribe really surprised me by welcoming me into their tribe. And if you know the history of the indigenous people and their distrust of anyone outside, you'll realize why I felt so honored by that. And so we're embedded in those communities. But while I'm there with my son, this one of my directors comes up and shows me that he's got a pair of shoes. And I said, well, how'd you get those? He goes, well, you see these trees? They're the rubber trees. And we source the rubber right out of that. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. And we go to the cotton. And my son said, hey, what if we start a shoe company now? Now, you think I'm crazy. Shoe company, beverage, technology. The thing is that it's about finding talent, capital, and cutting-edge thinking, and you can create whatever company you want to. Right? It's just finding the right mix. And so we start a shoe company. It's called Z Shoes. And Z Shoes, what I love about it is that it enables us to source ingredients, have a different kind of way of doing shoes. people ask me, well, what's your goal? I said, well, I want to challenge Adidas and Nike. Right? That's my aspiration. I want to have a new shoe company. And by the way, these shoes are so sustainable. They're so vegan, you could eat them. I mean, most shoes, you know, look at it. You throw your closet, they're going to be there for three generations because they're made out of materials that are not organic. They're not empowering people. In fact, you know the history of these shoe companies and what they've done with sweatshops, right? What if we change that model? What if we change it to empowerment in the supply chain? So to me, it's our aspirations about doing a business. It's more than just like, let's make a little profit and give it back to business or nonprofits or ministries. It's about how do we change the world? You see, I don't want to wear people's suffering anymore. I don't want to drink their tragedy. I don't want to tread on their dreams with my designer shoes. And I don't have to anymore. Because business as mission creates better ways to live life that honor the dignity of the image of God that is in every human being and in the environment that we live in. Amen, I hear. That's an election. Even the machine, the robotics are saying amen to that one. So I always give people an opportunity to get a big discount when I'm on stage. So if you Venmo me $60, you get $100 pairs of shoes. Before I get off stage, you got to Venmo $60 to at Z Shoes. All right? $100, you go online, you'll see they're $100 blackouts. All right? I haven't eaten these ones yet. All right? Men's and women's, $60 if you Venmo me before I get off stage. Otherwise, you can go on the website and buy it for $100. So, the model. Okay. And this is the last part of experimentation. I'd love to get conversation with you. So how do we raise capital now? How do we raise money for our projects? We decided that we don't want to just company by company build a model. We want to have small funds, like investment vehicles. And we'll bring three companies together. So in our latest funds called Innovate for Good, we have Square, which is our protein bar company, Z Shoes. And then we have a new tech company called Relocity. We bundle them together. So you're investing in a three-company bundle, and then we take a seed round. We just closed our $2 million seed round, and then we grow them. In 6 months, we're probably going to need another $3 million because the companies are growing so quickly. The valuation goes up, and you can invest in the second round, Series A. So then that companies will grow, and if any company in the portfolio goes public or we sell it, or then the money comes back to investors. And every company gives back money directly to the communities that Not For Sale is working with. So I love that model. If you want to be an investor, you can be an investor. You want to help me? How can I best help you? Buy a pair of shoes. Look, at all of you have shoes on today. What's the story of those shoes? If you can tell me the story of your shoes, do not buy Z Shoes. But if you can't tell me the story of your shoes, you got the wrong pair of shoes on, brother and sister. You with me? What's the story behind the beverages? You have a story behind your... Invest in stories. Invest your lives in stories, in transforming stories. Because life is too short to sell out to another Coke. Thank you very much. Great to be with you today.
All right, we have a question for you. Great job, by the way.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Found it.
We didn't even rehearse that, did we?
No.
Two white guys looking very awkward on stage.
How does an excellent investor or donor get comfortable that the proceeds or percentage of profits promised for some of the causes you mentioned are actually sent to the people on the ground? Are there globally accepted verification techniques?
For the distribution of funds?
Yeah.
You know, it's really very transparent and clear to us. We have a model that we use. It's first is how we source, that we source with dignity and a livable wage. So that's just kind of a relationship that you even see fair trade is on a product. That's kind of what we do, right? So no, we don't even think that's a special thing. But then after that, we give 2.5% of the gross price. So if you buy $100 pairs of shoes, $2.50 will go to the communities. Straight gross revenue. Now, I really want you to think about that because 2.5%, usually people say 2.5% of some profit, which never comes. Right? Someone says, hey, I want to give you a percentage of our profits for not for sale. And I go, yeah, I'm not interested. Give me some of your gross revenue. It's like making a movie. You never see a net profit. Right? It's always eaten up in the production of the film. So, yeah. And 5% equity for social capital for not for sale to hold and distribute to the communities that we're doing it. So equity, revenue distribution, and also fair wages.
All right, great. Second question. How is this model affecting the supply and demand specifically of the human trafficking industry?
Well, I tell you, we do not market, we market a beautiful pair of shoes. We don't market, hey, buy these shoes because we're helping trafficking victims. We found that people really want to look cool more than they want to simply have a good cause. In fact, what happens when you market your cause or your whatever your ministry might be or your people think, oh, it must not be a very good thing because it's made by a ministry or a nonprofit. I'll buy a pair, check the box, and then I'll never buy another pair again. Our philosophy is different. We want you to fall in love with our products. I can't tell you. In fact, Mark and I were at a restaurant last night in Cherry Hills, and the waitress says, oh, what are you guys doing in town? So we're at this conference, and what kind of companies? I said, well, Rebel. She goes, oh, I am obsessed with Rebel. I go, really? Oh, I'm obsessed with it. Turmeric. And she goes through all of our products. We're like, wow, that's cool in Cherry Hills. Yeah? And then we said, well, do you know anything about it? She goes, I read on the back of the bottle you're doing something about human trafficking one day. I went, oh, my gosh, now I really love this company. I was like, hey, wait, can I get a camera? Wait, let's. You know, it's fantastic. Now she goes, I tell all my friends. So think about this, about not for sale, stop slavery, because we both work in the anti. Imagine people are now telling their friends, and they never even met you, about stop slavery. Right? I couldn't get that budget for a nonprofit. And that's what I love about this, is that the cause, the ministry now has its own life. People are talking about it. I don't have to go every city in the world and get to a Rotary Club or a church and tell my story. The bottle does it for me.
All right. Great. Let's give David a hand.
Thank you.